Welcome to another episode of Convergence. I'm Ellen Taylor alongside Michelle McAloon. We take a deep look into issues of the day and how we see them through faith and culture, particularly our faith. So I'm joined by my co-host, Michelle McAloon. How are you, Michelle?
I am doing fine, Miss Ellen. How are you?
Well, you know, summer's rolling along. It's hot and steamy in lower Alabama. So
there we go. Be thankful for the small blessings, my friend.
Exactly. See, it could be a whole lot worse. Live in God's country.
It could be worse.
Right.
That's right.
I'm glad we have this opportunity to talk together. There's so much going on in the world, and sometimes we look at issues and we'll be trying to focus on what do we want to have a conversation about today? Where is news that's filtering in? What is important about it? And what can we add to the discussion? So there was an interesting article that we both were kind of reading about called The Antidote to Social Despair, where we are being very self-critical. Lots of writers are out there, and they are all pointing out what is wrong with today's modern culture and societies and where it went off the rails and how we can fix it. And these are all well good thoughts to be having and questions to be answering. But when someone answers that question, are they coming from a place of, let's say, proper formation of reason and observation to be able to come up with authentic solutions for our culture going forward? So that's some of the challenges we have in asking these questions. Are we asking the right questions? Are we using the right input of information in order to make these projections on what might be good for our culture in the upcoming steps? Do you see that as the same kind of deep questions going on in your readings that you're doing over there from Europe?
I think you've got a couple things going on here. First thing, why the self-flagellation right now, and why this constant critique of our culture? Where is this coming from? It is coming from a point that we recognize something's wrong. Something is not right. And this is what we are trying to articulate. And in this articulation, we're trying to come up with an answer. And that's a twofold problem, because I'm not sure we wholly understand why we're having these problems, why this self-criticism. And if we can't understand why we're having this self-criticism, we cannot find the answers. I believe why we are so self-critical right now is that we have gotten away from some of the basic virtues. Mm-hmm. And being able to live those basic virtues. But we can't articulate that. So things like hope, things like charity, love, help me out here. What are the virtues?
Faith, hope, charity, prudence,
you know, courage, those things, self-restraint, those things that we know help for human flourishing. We don't necessarily have the structure anymore to articulate those goods. We understand those goods are missing, but we can't articulate those goods. And so what we do is we try to dig into ourselves without any self-structure or any reference to a greater good or a common good. Does that make any sense?
It does. And I think that's the broad picture in the nutshell, which we'll dive into in just a minute here. But just a little history. So we used to be a society, a culture, a world that had great vision and hope in our future. Every generation kind of knew the next generation was going to be better. We're going to invent better things in our society that would help us flourish. We were going to create better living conditions to help people rise up out of issues of poverty or lack of water. So there was this great hope and vision across the last couple centuries that every generation coming next was going to be a little bit better, a little bit smarter, a little bit more compassionate to their fellow mankind. And if you ask anyone today, do they think the next generation's going to be enriched or better or smarter or happier? You don't get that same answer anymore.
Ellen, I don't know if that's true. And I've been thinking a lot about this recently.
Mm-hmm.
And the veterans came home from World War II. 16 million Americans fought in the Second World War. Mm-hmm. They came back. They literally said nothing. They said nothing to anybody about their experiences. And they immediately went back to work to try to make up for those lost years of their lives.
Right.
And nothing was ever said. And that's what we're finding out with the last few remaining of the Greatest Generation, that now, only now, 60 to 75 years later, they are revealing their stories and the horrors they went through when they were 19 and 20 years old. So what happens? They come back and they have this great energy in our society of it's going to be better. It has to be better. It's going to be better. But we had just fought two world wars. And our understanding of what it was going to have to do to be better was based on hope. And I believe not substance. So with that hope, it propels us to Vietnam War, where, I mean, we basically sort of got our butts kicked in the Vietnam War. Mm-hmm. And we just have kind of gone from war to war to war to crisis to crisis to crisis. We just finished with the Afghanistan War, or I think it's still going on 20 years later.
Iran and Iraq.
Oh, yeah, that's a whole nother conversation. I know. Iran and Iraq, we didn't do well in that. And I don't mean to take everything from a military point of view, and that isn't my intention at all. But that vision that the next generation was going to be better was not based on any kind of substance.
Because we had
just gone through two world wars.
Right.
And now we're saying, well, wait a minute, maybe the next generation isn't going to be better because for now, we're 75 years away from World War II, and it's not necessarily better. We're materially better, but we're not spiritually better at this point.
Well, that is probably the key point. And sadly, our society does measure ourselves from generation to generation, from war to war. I mean, that kind of is the defining element of a culture, a society, or the path of history, so to speak. You might have moments where faith crosses and touches upon, particularly involves itself in history so much that they become intertwined. But sometimes the journey of our faith life in our culture is a secondary element to the thread of war and the narrative of war, which is interesting. But really, if you look at them, they are so intertwined. So
they are. Socrates said, two things will always be with you, war and pandemic. And here we are.
Oh, right?
And, you know, and finally, since forever, most of the world has been suffering from malaria.
Right.
So finally, a pandemic breaks through to the Western world, and we are all a flutter. But folks, this is the reality. War and pandemic has always been on this side of Eden. And this post-Edenic reality is that we are going to suffer, that there are problems, that each generation is going to have to resolve problems. We hope to make it better. We hope to hand it down. But I think we don't hand it down in leaps and bounds and leaps. And we hand it down maybe a centimeter better, maybe incrementally better.
Do you feel, some have been said that our culture, we spend too much time ruminating on these issues, but maybe that is part of our problem. Instead of just going out and being the virtues of the world, like the World War II generation that came home and did. It was not built, as you said, on substance, but they want and lived the virtues in many ways. We have a culture right now that would rather sit in their home and ruminate on why things are so bad, yet not step a foot outside in order to help see and correct the problem. I kind of relate it to baseball. When a player's in a slump, what does he do? He's got to swing his way out of it. You're never going to get out of a baseball slump unless you get up to the plate and you start swinging. So how are we going to get out of this if we are still continually sitting in our homes on our sofas, fearful to take steps to live out some of these virtues.
I think you're absolutely right. I think, and we have to contribute a lot of this to the 24-hour news cycle. Mm-hmm. It has broken our concentration. It has fractured our ability to look at everyday life without the filter of national tragedy, national news. I contend that much of our despair is not in our everyday lived reality, but our despair is in this national conversation that in many ways is fictitious to the way that we live every day. Mm-hmm. So there is a internet reality, and you've heard me say this ad nauseum before,
right?
But there's an internet reality, there is a national reality, and maybe some of that does trickle down to Fairhope reality or hometown reality, especially when you pay your taxes. Mm-hmm. But the, you know, so that does. But honestly, there's two different realities, and why we let the narrative of the national reality sometimes guide the reality that is happening on our hometown. But in that hometown, that is not the reality of what is happening on the national level. Now, I've just gone through a bunch of different levels and talking about this, but what I'm trying to say is maybe the news is just entertainment, and our lived reality of walking around the neighborhood, of talking to people, is much different than what these experts who have so much despair.
And that is true, because maybe the best thing they could do for themselves is to open their front door, step outside in the sunshine and the warm summer sun, and talk to their neighbor, or mow their grass, pick up garbage, do something.
And people are doing that.
Yes.
And people do that, mm-hmm, on a regular basis, right? People go to cocktail parties. People go to the beach. People do these things on a regular basis. They're starting to join back into their churches. They're starting to go back. And I believe the conversation now on the national level and the local level needs to be live your reality. And that reality is in your small town, hometown radius. It's not the news. It's not. It is your family, your friends, your community. That is the reality you need to make.
I think the challenge there, and I totally agree with you, and it would be wonderful if everyone did that. The reality is the loudest voices in the news and in the social media platforms are the people that are sitting in their basement diligently typing their 280 characters to complain about something that aren't getting out into the world. So there is a distorted reality, I think, of the amount of despair, too. I mean, if you go look at a place like Twitter, you'd think the sky is falling every day, Chicken Little. But the reality is, I forget what percentage is actually on Twitter, less than 10%. And of those, 80% are of a liberal or progressive thought or leaning process. So you have a distorted reality when you go and you scroll through a platform like Twitter of what is going on in the world. You would think this is horrible, but there's a lot of beautiful things going on out there. And so it kind of circles back to what you said in the beginning of the virtues. And you listed like the three, faith, hope, and love, or charity, as some people call it. But a prudence, justice, fortitude, temperance, all of those things that can make our interactions with our neighbor just more delightful. You know, just
absolutely
something, yeah, that is edifying on the community level and not something that is, because you wouldn't open your door and yell at your neighbor the things that people type on Twitter. You wouldn't do it. You're more mindful of that. But there is an echo chamber of victimhood in a lot of ways on social media, and that just is crowding out all of the virtues that are really going on and existing in our world.
I think so. And I believe more Americans do not see them. Most Americans do not see themselves as victims. And yeah, this is by, I mean, you can look at our gun laws. We're definitely not victim people. And our rule of law and our property rights and our business law, we are not a victim people. We may let the narrative say that, but we really are not. We really are kind of a take charge, go west, conquer the world, conquer the silicone chips, conquer land, conquer the moon, conquer whatever is out there. That is truly the American spirit. So I think for human flourishing and how we move forward is actually going back, and maybe if it's going back, maybe it's starting to really look at the value of these values, of our virtues. And, you know, I think even people who do not have a deep religious tradition can access the goods of the virtues without having a deep religious background, although they make terrific sense in a deep religious background. But they are for all of humanity and for all of human flourishing, from being, you know, being temperate, being being charitable.
I've got the list.
Yeah.
Being practicing prudent, you know, right, practicing justice, compassion, dedication to the common good, openness to critique, willingness to sacrifice and serve, and not eschewing power, wealth, and status, and all things like that, but really 100 reasons for why we should care for each other and for mankind and in some of the most basic human ways.
Right. And that promotes human flourishing. And where does that come from? That comes from our understanding of the transcendent. We are transcendent human beings. We believe that our life goes on after us. We believe in a life that is outside of the body. We believe that in a incarnated body, but we also believe that there is soul and spirit outside of that lived experience. So we of a bodily experience. So these virtues are accessible to everyone if we can understand the virtues. And people talk about training in the virtues and virtue training. This is what we need more than anything right now, to make these accessible to everyone. Forget critical race theory. That has no virtue in it. Forget all of that other stuff. But you know something? Every race benefits from understanding what justice is. Every race benefits from understanding how to be charitable, what it means to have faith, faith in yourself, faith in others, faith in God, faith in country, faith in community. So I think the virtues and virtue training is what is needed more than the self-criticism, because you know what? We're as faulted as any other generation has been and will be on the face of this earth in the continuum of time. We just, you know, our sins are no different than Lot and Sodom and Gomorrah. And if you think I'm wrong, just open up the Bible and you go, hey, there's Uncle Joe. Yeah, there he is.
Well, let me ask you about that, because so much of our modern society and the way things are run, let's say in our local level or state level or national level or even NGOs and all of those things, they're not necessarily organizations that have an understanding of human flourishing and things like faith, hope, and charity as a prudent measure to better their societies. So we come up against things that we see in the news every day that are very disturbing to us for people that are trying to live out virtues at the local hometown level. And so that becomes very discouraging to people. They're like, well, why? What's going on here? We are trying, you know, in Lower Alabama where we are or where you currently are. I don't know what they're doing there in Germany. But we're trying to build these kinds of things, and yet we see them being swept away as having no meaning at the national and international level. So I think people have a lot of frustration about that.
Frustration, but I think this is what sort of I'm talking about, because you bring out a good point. But our ability to live the virtues is not contingent on some kind of media group or some kind of NGO. Mm-hmm. Our ability to live the virtues is actually up to us, to our faith, and to our community. And if we live the virtues, if we live righteous lives in the collective, in singularly, then the collective will be raised. We have to have hope in that. And we going back to the all these are these authors who are articulating despair and to they're not giving the human being the due of the ability to live the virtues if they are trained, if they are taught, if they are reinforced on a individual level to bring it up to the collective. Does that make any sense?
It does. It's just a little frustrating. And I think we've seen a lot of the frustration come out in recent weeks, particularly with parents, because parents who have busy just trying to work or raise their young families that have kids now of school age, you've seen a lot of conversations of parents opening their eyes and saying, this is what you're teaching my children. This is not a virtue in any capacity and has no place in school. And so I think on the lowest level of parents going to school board meetings, saying that is not something virtuous or even knowledge that we should be passing on to our children at this age. You need to be teaching my child how to read, a sense of civics, a sense of history, not kind of culture dividing modern day progressive thoughts.
I tell you, I think that's the most optimistic thing we have seen in a long time, mm-hmm. where parents have drawn the line in the sand and they, again, they may be churched, they may not be churched, they may be religious, they may not be religious, but they have an innate sense of what is wrong. They have a natural law understanding that teaching little Johnny that one race is superior to the other is not a good thing. But teaching justice and how justice was formed through the Western canon of history is something very good and something valued. And I have read those headlines. I think that is probably the most optimism we have had in over a year, where people are saying, no, on the local level, we want to live virtuously. We want to hand the virtues down to our children, and we want to be involved in that process. We're not going to leave it up to school to for some kind of made up conversation that's happening on the national level. In a community level, we need virtuous living. And I have been so heartened by parents. And there was a great one on YouTube. Uh-huh. It was an African American, and he just went off on virtue training and or what is it? Racial virtue theory, critical, or whatever you want
critical,
to call it.
Critical race theory. Yes.
Critical race theory.
Yes.
Critical race theory. Mm-hmm. So, you know, yeah. Are there injustices? Have there been historical injustices? And I say, yes. And we need to teach that. And we always need to see how people have solved that in the past, how we can solve this in the future. But all of that is based on an understanding of the created human being, that we're all equal, that we all belong to this a system of justice and a virtue of justice. So I've really been heartened by those conversations lately. You know, you can look at things bad. People push back on the vaccine. Mm-hmm. I thought that was a good thing. I'm not sure it was always the smartest of things, but again, people are saying, wait a second. No, I'm not going to do that until I understand that this is not coming from aborted fetuses. I think that's been a really strong, that's been very virtuous in the United States, mm-hmm. right? So there's highlights, and I think we should highlight those brave souls that are going out and saying, you know what? No, we're doing this. No, stop. And you know who I would really give credit to lately is Pope Francis. Pope Francis has said, nope, I'm drawing the line in the sand. Nope, Germany, you know what? You're not going to bless same-sex unions. No. You know what, Cardinal Marx? You're not going to retire because you got more work to do. I mean, there's just been one thing after another. No, Joe Biden, I don't have time to see you right now. There's been one thing after another that Pope Francis, who sometimes you want to...
Shake,
yeah, sometimes you want to shake, but he's shown some fortitude lately. He put out the book 6, New Penal Code. This is how we're going to do it. This is the way it's going to be, boys. This is what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. So, and it matters. It absolutely matters.
Right. And I think sometimes, as anything in life, when you get off a proper path, it takes some time to draw the line, redirect, and climb back out of whatever hole you dug yourself in. And we're seeing this at the school board level, and we're seeing where Pope Francis has said in his pastoral way, this will not happen. And we have to be able to push ourselves through it and not to sit in despair of at the bottom of the pit. Oh, no, we dug ourselves down here. We can't get back out. We've got to be able to push through that and put things back in place so that we can make those corrections going on and not sit in despair in our homes and in our basements saying, what the heck?
Absolutely. We are an Easter people. Uh-huh. We believe in hope. We mm-hmm. believe that there is the resurrected body. And that if that is not hope, I don't know what hope is. Mm-hmm. So that's what the Catholic Church needs to be doing, salvation of souls through the understanding of hope. And that's all I have to say about that. So
well, once again, in less than 30 minutes, you and I have solved the world's problems.
There you go.
Oh, yeah. Michelle, it's always great talking to you and having these conversations. It is edifying when you get nuggets in the news that actually pinpoint that we're going this direction. So don't despair, folks, if you are reading things and then you are like, oh, no, it's awful. No, we are an Easter people, and Alleluia is our song, and that's what we go forth every day going on. And we will get out of this again. There's no way to go but forward as on your local level, on an American level, as on a Christian level, on the international NGO level. Things are being revealed that are going to make our stomachs turn, and we just have to rewrite ourselves on this path of human virtue.
Right.
Human virtues.
Right.
All right. Okay, Michelle, it's always great catching up with you, and we look forward to the work you're doing on your podcast Crossword as well, and you can catch that as well wherever your favorite podcasts are. For Michelle McAloon, I'm Ellen Taylor, and we'll speak to you on the next episode of Convergence.